यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुनातीरावनचारे यमुनातीरावनचारे जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोदानन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 9 द सुप्रीम कैरेक्टर ऑफ जड़ भारत टेक्स्ट नंबर 3 आई बिलीव वी डिड 1 एंड 2 यस्टरडे Text number 3. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Due to his being especially gifted with the Lord's mercy, Bharat Maharaj could remember the incidents of his past life. Although he received the body of a Brahmana, he was still very much afraid of his relatives and friends who were not devotees. He was always very cautious of such association because he feared that he would again fall down. Consequently, he manifested himself before the public eye as a madman, dull, blind, and deaf, so that others would not try to talk to him. In this way, he saved himself from bad association. Within, he was always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord and chanting the Lord's glories, which save one from bondage of fruitive action. In this way, he saved himself from the onslaught of non-devotee associates. Purport. Every living entity is bound by different activities due to the association with the modes of nature. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam guna sangosya sadasad yoni janmashu. This is due to his association with the material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, text 22. We get different types of bodies among 8,400,000 species according to our karma. Karmana daivanetrena. We work under the influence of material nature contaminated by the three modes. And thus we get a certain type of body according to superior order. This is called karma bandha. To get out of this karma bandha, one must engage himself in devotional service. Then one will not be affected by the modes of material nature. Mamcha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate Sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, text 26. To remain immune from the material qualities, one must engage himself in devotional service, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. That is the perfection of life. When Maharaj Bharat took birth as a Brahmana, he was not very interested in the duties of a Brahmana, but within he remained a pure Vaishnava, always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. As advised in Bhagavad Gita, Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. This is the only process by which one can be saved from the danger of repeated birth and death. Om ajnana timirandasya jnananjana salakaya chaksur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamahim tadati svapadantikam. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivas Adi Gora Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, before we begin, I hope you've all welcomed Itasha Krishna Prabhu from Argentina. Hare Krishna, thank you for coming and joining us. I don't think he understands English too well. You do? Oh, I thought we could say anything and that would all be nice for you. But anyway, I'm happy that you came. Thank you for joining us. He will be here to assist Gokulananda Prabhu in our Spanish preaching. So he'll be here with us for at least 2 to 3 years and hopefully longer than that. Thank you. Is everything comfortable for you? Everything's good. So we're studying the life of Bharat Maharaj, who was a king, more than a king. He was a pure devotee for many thousands and thousands of years, 10 million years, ruled as a king of the entire universe. So much so that the entire world was named after him. Usually when a person becomes very great, at best you name a street after them. This is the such and such Gandhi Highway. Or you name an interstate Eisenhower or something, some name against it. Or at best you can even name a city. But the entire planet, entire Bharatvarsha was named after him, Bharatvarsha. So this is not some ordinary achievement. From that extraordinary platform, he fell. And he fell because he got attached to a little deer that he saved. And then became his pet, and his whole absorption was about that deer. And we've been hearing how Krishna protects Svalpamapi Asya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bhayat. Even if a little progress in devotional service is preserved and it saves one from the greatest fear, what to speak of Bharat Maharaj, his entire consciousness that he had achieved thus far was protected, although by the laws of the way Krishna's nature operates, Krishna forced him to take a birth of a deer just to protect that. And now in this birth he is born as Jada Bharata. Jada means dull or inert. Like this material world is called Jada, or knowledge in this material world, physics, chemistry, biology, engineering, is all called jada. It's dull. It has no value because it is not connected to Krishna. So anything that is seen separate from Krishna is considered jada. Therefore Krishna says, bhinna prakritir me ashtada. That the material energy consisting of these elements is inert because people don't see its connection to Krishna. Just as an iron rod that doesn't have any contact with fire sits like an iron rod. But when in contact with fire, it blazes and becomes almost like fire. So he is Jada Bharata, and in this life, he is very clear. Right from the get-go, he does not want to make even the slightest mistake. And though he was born in the family of a Brahmana, which we heard previously that in the Bhagavad Gita it's described, that on the path of yoga, one who has made sufficient progress but does not complete it, gets to be born in the house of a Brahmana or an aristocrat, like a very rich person. And those two provide for opportunities to further move on the path of Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, in the modern context, people who are born in rich families, because they don't understand this principle, or those born in so-called Brahmana families, they sometimes get even more deviated than others. Because neither in the Brahmana families nor in the rich families anyone considers Krishna consciousness as a viable option or a way of life. The modern Brahmanas, they all wear a thread, but they behave like Shudras. So the thread is there. They perform Upanayana ceremonies for their children. Upanayana means giving the Brahmanical thread, very young age. But they're all encouraged to get a job, make money, go to America, or if they're in America, do something, you know, get money, become rich, become materially well situated. All of this is okay. But in the absence of Krishna consciousness, these things become causes for further degradation. Like in Ishopanishad, we hear that cultivating something material has its value if one understands and sees it from a spiritual perspective. Otherwise, it doesn't have value. So, education, job or money, these things have value. These things have value when they are cultivated from a Krishna conscious perspective. Otherwise they have no value. It's like trying to be rich in a dream. It has no value. We can be as rich as we want in a dream. We can work very hard in the dream, but it's a dream. So material pursuit in the absence of Krishna consciousness is hellish. It doesn't make any sense. So he is aware of it. Very, very clearly aware. So he does not associate at all with his relatives and friends who were not devotees. So this is interesting. Even in that time, although born in Brahmana family, his relatives and friends, he did not associate with them. Something to remember here is Bharat Maharaj, Jada Bharat, is operating on a platform that is far beyond the Varna and Ashram platform. So his relatives were ultra pious. They got up every day in the morning, they bathed multiple times, they chanted their mantras, they lived very religiously, still he did not associate with them. In the modern context, we can't say our Brahmanas are like that. They may get up in the morning, they may chant some mantras, but their day only begins after they've had their coffee. Right? Without coffee, day doesn't start, especially South India. Something about South Indians, very, very unique personalities. very situated in religious life. But the day doesn't start without a cup of coffee. Only when you have coffee, that's like the start. Even the pujaris, they come to do religious ceremonies, they will chant their mantras, and they chant very nicely. Rat tat, left, right. I mean, they're very good. Then they will take a break. It's called a coffee break. All the pujaris will drink coffee. Then when they feel nourished and energized, they will go rat tat with their mantras. Then they will pause, have a coffee. And nobody else thinks that as odd anymore. Oh, pujaris want coffee. Everyone, get coffee. This is not devotional. And in fact, they don't think that coffee is something that's odd. It's intoxicant in the middle of all of this. It's just not appropriate. One time, I'm going to digress a little bit. At LA Rath Yatra, His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj has a Q&A tent, and that's one of the most attended tents, because he's just very, very good with how he answers questions. So I went to LA Rath Yatra one time, and I also stood there because I really like to hear from him. So someone asked a question, there was a crowd, and LA means all sorts of people come. So somebody came and they challenged Maharaj and said, "You people don't like sex?" That's something like that. You're against sex? And such questions in public, depending on how you answer, it polarizes people. So Maharaj said, "Oh, who says we don't like sex? No, we have no problem against it." And he said, "But there is appropriateness for it. There's a proper time and proper place for it." And he used a term called contextual appropriateness. He said, sex is good according to contextual appropriateness. And he explained, he said, so let's say the President of the United States is giving his State of the Union speech. It's a very formal thing. And, dignitaries from Congress and the House and all those great persons come and sit there. He said, let's suppose he's giving his State of the Union speech. And while he's speaking, he takes a pause, turns around, and picks a slice of pizza and bites into it. Is that wrong? No, it's not wrong, but it's not appropriate. Right? It's just contextually, it just doesn't make sense. It looks clumsy that in the middle of the State of Union speech, he's biting into his pizza. He said, similarly, there's nothing wrong with sex. It's just not appropriate in the human form of life when you're cultivating spirituality. There is a particular time and place, and that's okay with that. A person was so impressed by that answer. Oh, okay, that has its place. Otherwise, sex means no time, no place. Anytime, any place in the modern context. So these brahmanas, he's not associating with them. His relatives. I think it's in the next verse where there is reference to Srila Madhavendra Puri. Anyway, so the first principle Prabhupada's talking about is how do we come about getting this body? Why are we born in the family that we are born in? Why are we born into the species that we are born in? Why do we have our eyes and nose and ears, our hair, our teeth, body, bones? They're all structured in a particular way. And even in this room, just among the human species, there is so much variety. Some people's hair is dark. Most Hare Krishnas don't have hair, so you don't know what hair color they have. Except from the eyebrows, perhaps you can tell. Some hair is curly, some hair is straight, some is blonde, some is red. Eye colors are different, the facial structures are different, skin colors are different, skin tones are different. The health of the skin is different. Some are thin, some are tall, some are fat, some are short. But how do we get about this body? Just even in the human species, how do we get this body? It's described in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 22. Purusha prakriti sthohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangasya sad asad yoni janmasu. That a person gets a particular type of body and sense configuration because of his enjoyment tendency. It's a given that we all want to enjoy the material energy. That's why we have a material body. The material body is the instrument given by Krishna, given by material nature under Krishna's jurisdiction to facilitate our specific type of enjoyment. If I want to enjoy material energy by flying here and there, I can get the body of a bird. And if I like fault finding and little all dirty gossip, I get the body of a fly. I get to sit on garbage and, you know, but I still fly around. For example, not literally. Or if I want to enjoy material energy by being in the water all the time and surfing, I get the body of a fish. Enjoy the water. When Srila Prabhupada was in LA, he had never seen people surfing. That was something new he had seen. So he asked them, "What is this?" "Srila Prabhupada, this is called surfing." Prabhupada said, "Surfing? Suffering? They're not surfing, they're suffering. Back and forth, being tossed by the waves, and they're enjoying that. As if being tossed by the waves of material energy is not sufficient." He said, "That is suffering." So we have a certain sets of desires, qualities of desires. And the material energy has, behind the material energy is this fantastic intelligence. That intelligence takes the multifaceted desires that we have and it maps it into a type of species and body for the person or for the soul. And that is how the soul transmigrates from one type of body into another type of body. And this is all happening karmana daivanetrena. Daivanetra means the supervision of Krishna. So often people say that material energy works without governance or without higher intelligence. The Bhagavad Gita directly disputes that. It says daiva netrena. Netra means eyes. Daiva netra means the eyes of the personality of Godhead. He's the supervisor. By his supervision, the laws of material nature are designed and they act very, very exactingly. There is no error. In all of design, people, whenever they design something or they're trying to understand a phenomena, the biggest problem that they have to solve for is to reduce error. Correct? Because everything is approximation. We're only making assumptions. We're making assumptions because we start with no knowledge of the phenomenon. And we understand the phenomenon by making assumptions. And by our assumptions, we try to understand how much error there is, meaning how far we are from the actuality. And the rest of the problem then, in engineering or in design or whatever scientific experiment, is to minimize the error. That means to approximate as best as possible to the real phenomenon. But the Creator, because He knows how things operate, when He has designed something, there is no error. Therefore, His system is the most efficient, accurate, valid, and precise. Nobody can say, "I got the wrong body, Prabhu. I should have been, you know, whatever, I should have been born in Greece, but I think I got delivered in India. I think I got the wrong body. It's not like that. It's very precise. In fact, it is so precise that even in the same family, two siblings don't have similar trajectories. Even twins cannot have similar trajectories. Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they had similar trajectory. Both were killed by the personality of Godhead. Although they were twins. But twins, even then, is so precise. It works very individually. So if we don't like our body, if we don't like our psychological condition, there is nobody to blame. This is something we have received as something we have done previously. There's nobody to blame, there's nothing to be sorry about, there is nothing to complain, nothing, absolutely. It is something we have gotten from our previous activity. It is as simple as we eat something we should not be eating, or we overate, and the next few hours we have indigestion. We cannot complain about it. Oh, I have indigestion. The cook really made such nice prasadam. They should not cook like that anymore. Every day they should only have karela sabji, because then I will not eat much. Or something. We can't blame anyone. That's something we have gotten. So the human form of life then, the first order of business is how to rectify this from here on. Okay, we put ourselves in a mess. How do we get out of it? Luckily, Krishna doesn't help us put us in a mess, but he helps us get out of it. And he has given us a process. It's called devotional service. And he tells us how to perform it, what to do, what not to do, so we can get out of this like a cesspool of material energy. And he calls it avyabhichari bhakti, uncontaminated devotional service. The word vyabhichari literally means prostitute. Vyabhicharini, prostitute. Prostitute means she has no master. Everybody is the master. Whoever pays her is her master. Avyabhicharini means chaste, or quite literally, not contaminated, not unchaste. So the first principle of devotional life is that this chastity to the parampara and Krishna. Now, chastity to parampara and Krishna doesn't mean some sentimental thing. Chastity means Krishna is my master, and whatever Krishna has said, that's what I'm going to follow. If Krishna said do something, we do something. If Krishna says don't do something, we don't do something. Now, when we do something or not something against Krishna's injunctions, then we are operating in the vyabhicharini, the contaminated atmosphere. So first principle is avyabhicharini bhakti. So Krishna says, mam cha yo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. One who serves me with that kind of fidelity. The fidelity is towards Krishna. Sa gunan samatitya etan. Such a person is able to cross over the modes of nature. The reason we are in this mess is because we have signed up for the kaleidoscope program of the material energy. The kaleidoscope is really attractive. You turn a little bit and a new design. You turn it a little bit and a completely new, wonderful design. And it's all but broken pieces of glass and mirrors. But the illusion is so fantastic. Aha! These are the three modes of nature. They configure themselves so wonderfully that we get enamored by them. So yesterday I was listening to Shruta Kirti Prabhu. He was narrating a situation that they had organized for a program for Srila Prabhupada, and a lot of people had come. They were surprised. More than 500 people came and packed the hall. And on the stage was a big Vyasasana. That big Vyasasana, they had honored Srila Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada gave a class. And suddenly at the end of class, said, any questions? And one young man stood up and basically went on a completely different tangent. And his conclusion was, we are all God. So he said, Swamiji, we are all God. And he went on and on. And Prabhupada didn't interrupt him. He just kept going and going. Prabhupada just kept quiet, let him speak. And after quite a while, he concluded with, we are all God. And Prabhupada, you know how Prabhupada reacts and such. He got emphatic, just back straight, and said, you're not God, you're dog. And the whole crowd stood up and started clapping and applauding. The person who got so shocked by the force with which Prabhupada said, you're not God, you're dog, that he literally fell back into his chair. Everyone stood up and started applauding. So this kaleidoscope is such, the modes of nature make you think, oh, you're God. I mean, that's really silly. I mean, if God is there, you know, digestion problems and all this don't come. Krishna never complains anywhere in Bhagavatam, today I can't digest my food, I'm having a problem. There's no such thing. A normal personality cannot, a human being, or the jiva cannot be God. But the modes of nature, they enamor, entice the person into thinking all these wonderful things. So that distracts, I'm just talking about like thinking that we are God, but something else like, I'm a great person, I'm in a Brahmana family, I'm man, I'm woman, I'm so this, I'm so that. All that is just the kaleidoscope turning and the new configurations enamoring our consciousness. So the way to get out of this, he says, to remain immune, Prabhupada says, to remain immune from the material qualities. One must engage in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. This immunity means to not become affected by, to not get influenced by. It is something that is an internal strength. So to not get influenced by, oh, this is just illusion, requires a consciousness to be placed in a higher or even a different category called the spiritual category. And that comes from hearing and chanting and remembering the personality of Godhead. So every day, the reason that we come together and we hear and we chant, it's very important, like in the morning and evening when we hear, we associate with each other, we hear and we chant and we remember Krishna, is to develop that immunity. And the only way to develop a strong immunity is to do more of it. The more we do, the more immune we become. And if we don't do sufficiently, then our immunity is not strong enough. We may be nice and happy inside the temple. The moment we step out, finished. But that doesn't mean we are hermetically sealed from the rest of the world. Oh, no, 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 Prabhu, don't step out of the temple. There is Maya out there. For persons like that, there is Maya inside the temple also. Maya can be anywhere. Because Maya is not some external situation. Maya is right there depending upon the inclination of our consciousness. As soon as the consciousness is inclined a little away from Krishna, to that degree Maya is already occupied. We've been hearing about it. The Arab and the camel, or the passengers in a train in India. Just a little, and a little, and a little. So this immunity is very necessary. So Bharat Maharaj, from the beginning, was very immune. He did not associate with his relatives. and friends. There is a verse, by, next purport, there is a verse by Srila Madhavendra Puri. Sandhya Vandanam. He offers his respects to chanting Gayatri three times a day. He says, sorry, I'm not going to do all this. He says, Snanam three times a day, bathing three times. Sorry, I'm not interested in that also. Please let me go. Oh, my relatives, please forgive me. The great moralists and persons who are dealing with ethics, please forgive me. Right now I'm chanting Hare Krishna and I'm very happy with that. Don't bother me with these things. Because the sharp moralists may take objection. Get a job. What are you doing? You parasite. I said, please forgive me. The relatives may say, what are you doing? You're our family. Why are you not, you know, being like us, being normal? How many of us have heard from our family? Why can't you be normal? We hear this every day. Why can't you be normal? Why you have to be like this? Be normal. Do your bhajan, do your chanting and all. Just be normal. Somebody came to Srila Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, they are saying that we as devotees of the Hare Krishna movement, that we are all brainwashed. Because during that time, brainwashing was a big term. And Prabhupada in his, I guess, spiritual innocence said, so what is wrong with that? Your brains were so dirty, I had to wash it thoroughly. So yes, you were brainwashed. Brahmananda Prabhu's mother, Brahmananda and Gargamuni Prabhus were brothers, and they both came to Prabhupada, and they did fantastic service. So their mother came to meet them, meet Prabhupada, to complain to Prabhupada that you've taken both my sons away. But Prabhupada was very expert. So when she came, she was being very gracious and she said, Swamiji, it's very nice to meet you. And Prabhupada said, when you get good fruit, by the good fruit you can say, you can come to some conclusion of how good the tree must be. So because you have two wonderful sons, it shows that you're a very wonderful person. And she said, thank you, Swamiji. And then after some conversation, he told her, you should give some donation for the Hare Krishna movement. So he said, Swamiji, I've already given both my sons. He said, thank you very much. And that way she couldn't argue to get the sons back. He said, thank you very much. And she got caught in her own, I guess, little trick she was trying to play with Prabhupada to ask him to return her sons. So when he said, you should give some donation, she said, Swamiji already gave my sons. He said, thank you very much. That way she can't ask him back. Prabhupada was very amazing. Srila Giriraj Maharaj, who came, he's from Chicago, Glencoe here, came from such a rich family. They were millionaires back in the 60s and 70s. So today there'll be, you know, tens of millionaires, I guess. And he describes that his sister's closet for shoes was bigger than the Brahmachari ashram in one of the temples. Just for keeping shoes. So many shoes. So many shades of colors of shoes. Some of you are thinking, oh, that wouldn't be so bad. No. And from there, he went to serve Prabhupada in Mumbai, where Prabhupada wanted to start a temple in Juhu. How many of you ever seen Juhu temple? Okay. Juhu today is like Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. It's like a place where they call it Bollywood. It's like the center of the Indian films industry. And all the Bollywood stars live in and around that place. Like, it is ultra rich. But when Srila Prabhupada wanted to start the temple, he is there from Juhu, he knows. When he wanted to start the temple, it was nothing but a swamp. There was nothing there. Just trees, swamp, and mosquitoes. And when Prabhupada said, this is a place we should build a temple, all the devotees said, Prabhupada, Nobody comes to this part of town. In fact, this is not even part of town anymore. Nobody comes here. It's marshy. It's dirty. Who will come here? Prabhupada said, no. This is the place we should build the temple. So anyway, there's a fantastic history. If you ever get to read the details of the fight with one of the owners of the land at that time was Mr. Nair. And Mr. Nair was such a, Prabhupada called him a demon, that he cheated the devotees of the land. Anyway, I won't get into that story, but after Nair suddenly died of heart attack, Prabhupada folded his palms and said, thank you, Krishna, for killing him. So anyway, when they got land, they didn't have enough money, and Prabhupada was collecting money, and so they put up a makeshift temple. And it was nothing but a tin sheet on both sides and a tin sheet on the top, altar for the deities. And Prabhupada prayed to Radha Ras Bihari, please stay here. I will go and build a temple for you, but please, please stay here, don't leave. And that land was marshy, and the pictures of Giriraj Maharaj just wearing flip-flops, eating nothing literally. And at night, they would lie down in that marshy, swampy place and shared the sleeping floor with mosquitoes, roaches, rats. Really bad, so bad that he got malaria. Just sleeping in such austere places, got malaria, contracted it very seriously. When his father came, Giriraj Maharaj's father came to visit him, he broke down, started crying. He said, you're a prince, you lived so comfortably in such opulence. What are you doing? What is this? And he said, please return. He said, no, no, I have dedicated my life to Srila Prabhupada, I cannot return. So he went to Prabhupada. The father went to Prabhupada and he said, Swamiji, I have a request. You please return my son. And in return, I'm giving you a check, a blank check. And you can fill any amount you want on that. Just return my son. Don't worry. As much money as you want, you can take. I have no problem. Prabhupada called Giriraj Maharaj into the room. And he said, your father wants you to go back. Giriraj Maharaj started crying. Please, don't send me away. I'm being with you is the greatest opulence. I don't want to go back. It doesn't matter where I'm staying, what I'm eating or not eating. All of this is immaterial. Just being with you and serving you is the greatest gift. I don't want anything. Please don't send me back. So Prabhupada looked at the man and said, this has nothing to do with money. This is a bond of love that is so strong that has got nothing to do with money, and so I don't want money. He doesn't want to go back, nor do I want to send him back. His father said, wow, and he returned back. So avyabhicharini bhakti is that kind of fidelity for Krishna. And immunity is to not allow conceptions from the modes of nature to take place within our consciousness. So many people will say, why this? This is not right. The Hare Krishna. Oh, the Hare Krishnas, my gosh. Whatever they say. Doesn't matter. We don't let our consciousness get diluted by what our relatives say, what our family members, parents. They may have all these different ideas of what life should look like. But that's not what we are diluted by or distracted by. Our conceptions come from our parampara. Oh, it doesn't mean we disrespect them. That's not the point. We don't disrespect anyone. In fact, when we are very loving to an aunt, why should we be disrespectful to our parents or relatives? We should not be. But respecting does not mean that they can decide things for us. Respect means that they have a place in our life. We have received from them previously certain things, and we are grateful to that, and that's about it. And we don't tell them, oh, you're so bad, or no. They have their place, but our conceptions come from the parampara. Very, very important. Very important. And in this case, Jada Bharat didn't associate with them at all. Why? It says he was afraid. He was always very cautious of such association because he feared that he would again fall down. This is the fear of a Maha Uttama Adhikari. Prabhupada said, one of the problems with all of you is that you are not sufficiently afraid of the material energy. We think we have a problem. Weeks, months and years of Krishna conscious practices, and then we think, nothing can happen to me. I can go out on a limb. I can go out and take risks for Prabhupada's movement. And we start taking risks. It's really not for Prabhupada's movement, but we actually take risks. And before we know, all the other devotees have to come look for us. Where is this Prabhu? We should take risks for Prabhupada's movement, no doubt. But we shouldn't take risks foolishly, whereby we put our own Krishna consciousness at stake. We should take risk, no doubt. The greatest risk, if you will, that we have taken is that we have committed to Krishna. For most people, they will say that's a gamble. Have you seen Krishna? So we can ask them, have you seen happiness? From what you're doing, have you seen any happiness? No, but everyone else is doing, so that is our formula. If everyone is doing something, hey, everyone cannot be wrong. Right? Everyone cannot be wrong. So if everyone is moving forward in the path of material pursuit, everyone cannot be wrong. That is there. And our risk we take is we decide not to sit on the conveyor belt. At our university program, I defined it as the CBLM model. CBLM is the conveyor belt lifestyle model. It's the same thing. Everyone does the same thing. So we're like suitcases on a conveyor belt. We just look different. One is red, one is white, one is yellow, one is something. And nowadays there are so many suitcases that all look black that you have to have a personal tag on it that you can recognize it. Some people have some white funny thing. You know how it's a devotee's suitcase? If it's a black suitcase, they have a dhoti piece tied to it. So that's it. No, that's a devotee's. Part of the gamcha or part of the dhoti tied to it. That's how you recognize. But conveyor belt means they're all doing the same thing. They're all following along. Wherever the belt takes, that's where they're going. Rupa Goswami, right in the beginning of his teachings, cautions us against such association. And he emphasizes it multiple times. Sangatyaga, Janasanga, Satovrite. I mean, this said positively and negatively. Positively, he says, Satovrite. Follow the path of the Acharyas. And then he cautions us, what is dangerous for your bhakti is Janasanga. And then what is favorable for your devotional service is Sangatyaga. Material association. Some people say, what to do, Prabhu? Material energy is bothering me. And the answer is, it only bothers us. Madhavendra Prabhupada was nicely explaining the other day that the material energy only activates when we pay attention to it. Otherwise, it doesn't activate. It's dull, inert. For a pure devotee, his attention is not in the material energy. So the material energy just does not bother him. Prabodhananda Saraswati says, right, that it's like the snake whose fangs have been removed. The poison has been extracted, so the snake does no harm. But as soon as we pay material energy attention, it gets activated. So if the material energy is bothering us, That means somewhere we're paying attention to it. We're investing our consciousness into it. A very fundamental concept is this. I think this is important to know. This material body, and we've heard it many, many, many times. This material body is made of elements, gross and subtle. And when the soul is not in it, the body doesn't move, think, no chemical processes are activated. As soon as there is soul, meaning the presence of consciousness, it's activated. Correct? We've heard this many times. In fact, this is what we tell others also. Similarly, the material energy. It is dull, inert, and absolutely doesn't do anything. The moment we invest our consciousness into it, we put our consciousness in it, and it awakens. Because when there is presence of consciousness, matter moves. We put our consciousness in matter, and it gets activated. We don't put our consciousness in matter, it doesn't get activated. And I'll end with this story. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur narrates a story. There was a disciple who came to the guru and said, "My attachments won't leave me. They're bothering me. Please give me a solution, Gurudev." So Bhaktisiddhanta said, "All right." The guru said, Bhaktisiddhanta is narrating this story. He said, "Okay, tomorrow you come and meet me in such and such place in the forest." Okay. So he's going to meet his guru. And as he's going along, he hears a voice. "Help! Help me!" He says, "I recognize that voice. That's my guru's voice. Looks like he's in trouble." And he runs, thinking he can help. So he follows the voice and says, "Help me! Help me!" He follows the voice and he sees his guru is perched up on the trunk of a tree with his arms and legs around the trunk of a tree and he's crying out, "Help me! Help me!" So he said, "With all due respects, Guru Maharaj, what's the problem?" He said, "This tree won't let me go." So he thought there was something transcendental in this. Like, "But I'm sorry, I don't understand. What do you mean the tree won't let you go? You have your hands and legs tied around the trunk of the tree. So I'm not sure what do you mean the tree won't let you go." Boom, the guru jumped down from the tree and said, "Same with your attachments. Exactly that's the problem. You are holding them on. You are holding on to them and crying that your attachments are not leaving you. You're holding on. We invest our consciousness into something and it sticks. Material energy is like tar. Right? We've heard this example of a tar baby. You know what's tar, right? The black sticky thing they pour on the road to get all the stones to stick together. You touch tar, what happens? It sticks. How do you remove it? You have to put another finger to remove it. What happens? It sticks to the other finger also. You put a third finger, it sticks to a third finger. Before you know, the whole hand is stuck with tar. What was the problem? We went and touched the tar in the first place. If we didn't touch it, we'd be fine. This is how material energy works. It is active, it is bothering us because we are going to it. It's not that it is pursuing us. We are going after it. But our situation is that we've been doing this for many years. So our whole body is dipped in tar. That's the problem. Only the eyes perhaps are a little cleaned up, but nothing else. The whole body is soaked in tar. And the guru has to clean it up. That's the tough problem. So what to do? We simply cooperate with the guru's instructions and let the mercy remove the tar. It's not like we have touched it a little bit with our finger. We are dipped in it fully. So just cooperate. All we can do is cooperate with the instructions of the guru and sadhu and shastra. And the tar will come out. That is called the Sagunan Samati Tetan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Okay, I think I talked more than I should. Any comments?
Would you like to add anything, Prabhu? Himanshu? When Daita Prabhu is not there, the mic doesn't come. It's a Thursday.
So, Bharat Maharaj, a very exalted devotee, and we hear that a Madhyama Adhikari, he sees four types of people.
Yeah.
The non-envious, the friendly, the devotees. And then Uttama Adhikari, one was Uttama Adhikari, he sees everyone as a devotee. So I'm just curious, Bharat Maharaj being so exalted, surrounded by what you defined as very religiously oriented people, probably in the mode of goodness, and we hear the mode of goodness is a very ideal platform for making further spiritual advancement. Still, instead of becoming, say, a role model for his family, he chose to stay away from them, even though he was so exalted. And he probably saw them all as devotees, or even if he wasn't an Uttamadhikari, but he was on the stage of Baal, which means he probably had Uttamadhikari. So how do we understand this?
If I may slightly modify, it's not that an Uttamadhikari sees everyone as a devotee. He sees everyone following the plan of Krishna already. So there's nothing to change like that. You can say he sees everyone as a devotee in their spiritual identity. Yes, everyone is a devotee. But it's not that everyone's already following the plan of the Lord. What's there to fix it? Like there's a saying, right? Why fix if it's not broken? So the Uttamadhikari's view is nothing's broken. Everyone's following the plan of the Lord. Accordingly, Pandita Samadarshanava is just in the dog body because whatever choices is made is in the dog body. He's following the plan of the Lord. He's in this body, he's in that. He's just following the plan of the Lord. There's nothing to fix. Like that. So he's not saying that, but I'm not part of it. He doesn't want to be part of the Varna ashram system. He's situated himself way outside it because he's already there. Even Rishabdev did the same thing, right? He stepped outside the Varna and ashram system and just was a complete recluse. Worldly perspective recluse, fully situated in Krishna. So he's also fully situated because he just doesn't want to interact with any, he doesn't want to do anything. You know, we've noticed, right? We in general may not be cautious of something. But once we've tasted the punishment, naturally we're a little, perhaps more cautious than normal about something. Once foolish, twice shy. So he's extra cautious. I don't want to interact only with anyone. What's the use of... I just don't want to interact with them. That's where he is. Because he has lost one lifetime, lost another lifetime, he doesn't want to lose this one. It's too much of a risk he does not want to take. That's how he is thinking. This same person, wait, and you will see, he will speak. And he will speak fantastic philosophy to a king to help him. But he doesn't speak to his family, he doesn't speak here, doesn't speak to anyone, even to the persons who want to kill him, no protest. But when he knows when it's the right time to serve Krishna, he serves accordingly. He speaks to Maharaj Rahugana. There was no need to speak, he could have just taken the insult. So this is how the pure devotees are operating. Krishna wanted him to speak. Before that, when the dacoits wanted to cut his throat off, he didn't say to them, nothing. You're making an offense to a pure devotee, be careful, nothing. He didn't protest. And just because Maharaj Rahugana chastised him, hey, can you walk straight, I will beat you with my stick. Then he spoke. So it's not that he doesn't want to preach, he just doesn't want to interact. No use. So better not. In general, as a principle, children of the family should not preach to their family members. You should let someone else take care of that, I guess, dirty work. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. Only when the parents or relatives ask, then it's okay. Going out of our own way to preach to our parents is really not worth it. It's a lot of work. A lot of unnecessary work. Because they only see us as
Yeah, very nice. I know what you used to do before all of this. You're telling me now? That's the hurdle. Anything else? Okay. 8:30. Anything here? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
You're speaking tomorrow. Madhuri Prabhu, you're speaking tomorrow?
Not today.
Today is Thursday. Oh, that verse is beautiful. Madhuri Prabhu.